from Kitchen Pantry Studios in Atlanta, Georgia. It's the Dancing Housewife Show. Joining me today is Lauren Wallier. What's unique about Lauren is that she was born premature, weighing just 14 ounces. She was diagnosed with cerebral palsy at the age of one, but it's never stopped her. She's the founder of the Make Lemonade Foundation for Cerebral Palsy. Lauren, welcome to the Dancing Housewife Show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so, so excited.
First of all, I want to congratulate you on graduating from high school earlier this spring. And I know you're headed off to college at the end of the summer. Is that correct?
That's correct. I'm pumped for that new adventure. And I'll be attending Rollins College in Winter Park, Florida.
That's great. And what do you think you might want to study?
As of right now, I want to study communications and then go on to law school.
Oh, well, I have no doubt that you are going to reach every goal. I was lucky enough to get to see you dance at the Atlanta Open in May, and you're such an inspiration. So before we get sidetracked, I'd like you to give our listeners some background. So tell me a little bit about what your life has been like growing up with cerebral palsy. You walk pretty much unassisted right now, but I know it hasn't always been like that. Can you share a little bit of your story?
Of course. Having cerebral palsy has really shaped who I am, and I'm proud of it because I feel like everyone has a gift, and this disability is definitely part of mine. I was diagnosed, as you said, as a year old, but I was born at 14 ounces and had a 0% chance of living, so technically I shouldn't even be here. So I'm very happy that I am. You know, cerebral palsy was a huge part of my childhood growing up, and huge part of my life today. And a lot of people ask how it was different or how it was more challenging, and I really have to say that my parents are the reason why I am as successful and confident and strong as I am today. I have had the privilege to have two of the world's most amazing parents that weren't going to put me in a box and were going to support me, motivate me to reach for the stars and accomplish every dream that I had. And I always say I don't do anything halfway, and that's probably because of the example I had growing up, and I can't thank them enough for that, because I see a lot of people out in the world in general, and I am just so proud to know that I have this powerhouse team behind me, and that they're the reason I am who I am. So I don't know if that quite answers your question, but
well, it does. I mean, you know, it's easy when you have a disability to feel like a victim, and it's very inspiring to hear you describe your disability as one of your gifts, because it's shaped you to be the person that you are. And I commend you for having that kind of attitude. It's why you're so successful. It's why people are drawn to you. I talked to your mom a little bit about at the Atlanta Open, and I couldn't believe that, about 2 years ago, you were in a wheelchair. Is that right?
2 years ago. Almost 6 years ago now. I mean, time flies when you're having fun, right?
So 6 years ago, you were in a wheelchair, and then how long, and then you graduated to a walker, is that right?
Yes. So one thing I definitely like to make clear is I was never permanently confined to my wheelchair, and I was very lucky. I wasn't one of those people that couldn't walk or talk or feed themselves or dress themselves, brush their teeth, eat their food by themselves. A lot of the things that, you know, most people take for granted, that's a lot of the kids that you see in a wheelchair. I find it's more rare to see someone in a wheelchair the way I was. So the way I had my wheelchair be a part of my life, whether or not I wanted it to, was I reached a point with my cerebral palsy and I ended up becoming extremely fatigued and reliant on my chair for the majority of the day while I was at school. And then when I would go home, I would just kind of lay down or sit down. I really had no energy to do anything anymore, and my body was kind of shutting down, almost like a wilting flower. Or if you know, switch your lights on and off, every light in my body was just being turned off. And my mom, who I know I mentioned before, but my mom is just this amazing woman, because she was insistent on finding out what was going on, because she always said that she was losing her girl, like something was not right in any way, shape, or form because of all the rapid declines. So she took me to every doctor's appointment, every sleep study, every blood test to possibly figure out what was going on with me, because it wasn't adding up. You know, one day I was functioning perfectly fine for someone with a disability. I mean, I wanted to be very active in everything that I did in school. I had lots of friends. I was the social butterfly. And then all of that went down the drain, and I was almost permanently dependent on my wheelchair just to do the most basic things like walking. And I lost all of my strength. There was atrophy in almost every muscle of my body. And little did I know, I didn't have very much oxygen in my body. So it's very hard to be lively and vivacious when there's not air throwing, you know, flowing through your bloodstream. So I was very, very fortunate to go from a wheelchair and in very bad shape to a walker, to a crutch, and now I currently use a 1-point cane. And before I go away to college, my 1-point cane will be gone, and my functionality level will be the highest it's ever been. And that's all thanks to my therapy program, which is located here in Atlanta, Georgia, called the Symptom Recovery Model.
Yes, and I want you to talk to me a little bit about that. It's very intriguing and interesting. Can you tell us how you found out about this, when you started the Symptom Recovery Model, how much time you spend every day in therapy, and just can you explain a little bit about it for us?
Of course. It's one of my passions. I found this therapy when I was about 12 years old, just turned 13.
And let me interrupt you just for a minute. You're 18 years old now, and you found the therapy when you were 12 or 13. So that's pretty much when you were really, really experiencing that rapid decline. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah,
okay.
I had been experiencing it for a year prior to that. It all happened around when I started puberty.
Okay.
And I am so grateful to everyone who works there, to Dr. Sue Leje and Dr. Josh Davis for being the driving force behind the program. And without them believing in me, I probably wouldn't be where I am.
So the Symptom Recovery Model, as I understand it, the plan is different for every patient that walks in the door. Is that correct?
Yes, it's an individualized treatment plan. It's not traditional therapy. What this does is it not only gets you as well as you were doing before, it gets you doing that much better. And I'm living proof of that. And for someone with cerebral palsy, that's a huge gift. And my doctor will tell you right away whether they can help you or not. It's not just for cerebral palsy. It's for, I would say, pretty much anything you got in the bag.
Really? So tell me what a typical day is for you. And how many days a week do you go to, do you have therapy? And how long, how much work is it?
When I first started, because I was still in public school, I was going one day a week for 8 hours. I was still trying to keep up with my schoolwork and everything.
Right.
So that was the most that we could kind of pull away at that moment. And it was an hour and a half drive or more. So, like I said, I go back to my parents. I'm very blessed that I had a mother and father and grandmother to drive me an hour and a half to and from Fayetteville, Georgia. And then over the course of several years, I spent time in Fayetteville and made amazing gains. I was no longer bowel and bladder incontinent, which was huge, you know, with cerebral palsy or with a lot of disabilities. I believe that people look at just the exterior, and there's a lot of things on the interior that go on as well, such as the bowel and bladder.
Right.
And basic things such as, you know, tying your shoes and things that I was never able to do before were now coming to the surface when I was able to achieve those things. They then opened another clinic in Roswell, Georgia. And then I started going 3 days a week for 7 hours a day. And that that process had already started in Fayetteville. We just then moved it to Roswell. When my mom and dad saw the amazing gains, after the seventh grade, I left public school and started being homeschooled. And then I started doing online public homeschool so that I could continue my education as well as getting as much therapy as I could possibly get within reason to continue making those gains to reach my goal of having the most functionality possible for someone with a disability.
Right. Tell me some of the things that you do in one of your 7-hour sessions.
Well, a lot of the things that they're working on at this point is fine-tuning.
Okay.
So my doctor has a phenomenal quote that he gave for another article about the program. This is from Dr. Josh Davis. He says, "We're not treating a disease, but the functional deficits that happen because of the disease." So, at the end of the day, I will still have cerebral palsy. But if you looked at me, you would never know that I had cerebral palsy. Unless I had some sort of brain scan, you would see the damage that was done from the brain bleed when I was a baby. It's almost like a stroke.
Right.
An adult, but in a baby. So that's what causes the cerebral palsy and the damage in the brain.
When we were at the Atlanta Open, we were talking a little bit about the symptom recovery model, and I feel like I remember, maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like I remember that you told me that one of the things that you do as part of this symptom recovery model is some martial arts figures or forms.
They do a lot of manual structural correction and integrative manual therapy. And then they do things such as laser and ultrasound to reduce inflammation and to loosen tissue. And then as a technique to improve balance and, in my opinion, self-awareness of the body, I do about 10 to 20 figures of Tai Chi, which is very helpful for balance and coordination.
That is a great segue into your ballroom dancing, which also takes a good deal of balance and coordination. And so would you say that without this symptom recovery model, your ballroom dancing would be unattainable for you?
I think without my therapy program, my ballroom dancing, as I do it today, would be non-existent.
Yeah.
I really owe everything to them because they didn't want to just give me the minimum. They wanted to give me the maximum and then some. And they still do. I'm still working. And there are so many phenomenal things that they do. And like I said, it's different for every patient. And everyone has different goals. Everyone's going to go down a different path and experience a different journey. But at the end of the day, you know, it's something so phenomenal that I feel could be such a gift to so many people. And so I want to make it as known as I can.
Well, that's part of why we're doing this interview today. And now let's go back and let's talk a little bit about your ballroom dancing. When did you decide you wanted to become a ballroom dancer?
I had that dream starting about 3 or 4 years old. And I saw some old movies with Gene Kelly, Sid Charisse, Fred Astaire, Ginger Rogers, the greats of the greats. And I thought, how fantastic would it be to be able to dance like that and move like that and be so, so graceful out on that floor. But I sat there watching the TV as a little kid in all my gear, as I call it, wondering how in the world that was going to happen, because I didn't want to do it if I wasn't going to look like the people I watched. And I never let go of that dream. And the ballroom dancing is so helpful in its own way with the therapy. They complement each other perfectly. And I feel like the dreams really become one. And without me having that dream as a little girl, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing today. So it really, I am just so grateful for every time that I get to step out on that floor with Mayo, because I know without all these people behind me, my parents, my doctors, especially Mayo, I wouldn't be getting to do what I do. And I've heard people tell me that it really is like a real life fairy tale, and I love getting to play Cinderella.
Yeah.
I mean, who won it, right?
Right. Well, I have to say that, you know, I talk a lot about in my blog and on this podcast, we talk a lot about the benefits, the health benefits of ballroom dancing. And you're just validating a lot of what lots of people believe anecdotally, but also what a lot of medical science has proven is that ballroom dancing really is good for your brain and your body. And the fact that you're improving so rapidly and that the symptom recovery model and your ballroom dancing seem to be working hand in hand to just make you stronger and improve your functionality. And it's just a wonder to watch. I mean, it's amazing to watch you dance. Now, you mentioned your pro, Mayo. Tell me a little bit about him. And I know he lives in New York City. And so I've heard the story, but I want you to share the story of how you and he became partners.
This is one of my favorite stories. I'm literally beaming ear to ear just thinking about it. He is one of the kindest, most beautiful people I think I've ever met in my entire life. He is a rarity, I think, in this world, just because he has such a phenomenal heart. And that's kind of the whole part of this story, is his heart. Because when I was first ballroom dancing very casually for about 2 years, I had Googled everyone upon everyone of who I thought was just the most amazing dancers. I watched every video, and I kept coming back to Mayo just because I thought he was such a beautiful dancer, and he seemed like such a gentleman on the floor. And I remember thinking, wow, it would be really amazing if I got to dance with him one day. And as I researched him a little further, I found out that he has a sister with a disability called Angelman syndrome. And that kind of sealed the deal for me right then and there, because I always thought if we met, he would be totally comfortable and know what to do with me, and he'd be up for the challenge of dancing with someone like me. And I just held on to that little dream for quite a while, and I never reached out, I never did anything, but I kept it in the back of my mind. And then I was talking, I believe via text or something like that, with a friend of mine who at the time had just switched pros, and she started dancing with Mayo Allenin. And I was like, oh my gosh, you dance with Mayo? I've always wanted to dance with Mayo. Do you think he would do something for my foundation? Like, immediately, I don't think I even thought of dancing. I thought, oh my gosh, he could make a post on Facebook. He would totally blow this up. Like, that would be so amazing. And little did I know, she happened to be in New York as this all was taking place, having lessons with him, I believe, mentioned just a little something about me and that I was a fan of his, just enough to grab his ear. And then he texted me the very next morning, and I was like, Mara, Mayo Allenin, the guy I've been talking about for like 2 years. I was like, he wants me to go to New York. How do I go to New York? And my friend suggested that I go to New York for my 18th birthday. So my birthday present was meeting Mayo. I don't think he thought I would reply, let alone reply so quickly, let alone actually be flying out to meet him and to dance with him. And something that happened for a week morphed into this hopefully forever partnership that I'm so grateful to have with him.
It's really beautiful to watch you guys dance together. And he's just an incredible dancer.
He is. I can't say that enough. I mean, out of all the people, obviously I'm biased, but he's my favorite.
Well, it's got to be hard enough for you guys to practice, and with you being, you know, living in an Atlanta suburb and Mayo living in New York City, but it's going to get even harder because in the fall you're going to be all the way down in Florida. So how are you guys going to practice when you're in college? I mean, I assume you're going to keep dancing.
Oh, of course. Yeah, that's not stopping. Now that it started, it's not stopping. It's an addiction. I think what our plan is, we haven't firmed it up yet, but I think what our plan is to really just continue what we do now, is to travel back and forth to one another. I would fly to New York and he'd fly to Atlanta, and we would do that on repeat. And I think now it'll just be, he'll fly to Rollins, I'll fly to New York. And we'll just make it work, and I don't know what the schedule will be like yet, but I'm not letting go of anything, and we're going to figure out what way it works best, and I think it'll be a really great supplement for some of the therapy that I receive now to continue dancing, because it really works on posture and balance, fluidity, a lot of the things that, you know, you need when you're walking, like your core, your coordination,
right?
Just all those key things. So it'll be like therapy wrapped up in a pretty little box and presented from Mayo. You know, it'll be the fun therapy, right?
Yeah. So, speaking of being wrapped up in a pretty little box, I heard, and this is very rare for an amateur, but I heard that you are sponsored by a dress designer. Is that true?
I am. I'm sponsored by Jordy. Chris Stevenson.
Uh-huh. How exciting is that? Do you get to wear a new dress every time you compete?
Not yet. I actually am in the process of designing my new smooth dress.
Uh-huh.
And I think the story behind that is so beautiful. Mayo and I were invited to perform for the evening session by Mark Brock at Michigan Dance Challenge. And my story had been shared. Mayo and I had performed our show dance routine called The Swan. And it was very strong for the time. Of course, it keeps improving, but I think we were both very proud of it. And we walk off the floor, and I guess Chris Stevenson was in tears and came to find Mayo and said that he wanted to sponsor me for life. And it was the most amazing, amazing experience, most amazing gift. And it was a dream come true. I mean, I had kind of very innocently 2 years prior, again, when I was dancing very casually, kind of getting my feet wet, I had heard of this thing called a dress sponsor. And I was like, Mom, I'd love to have a dress sponsor one day. And I don't really know what I was thinking. I thought that would be the most amazing thing, right? You get to wear free dresses.
Right.
And I just, again, held on to that dream. And then, lo and behold, you know, my dream came true, and Chris Stevenson is sponsoring me. And it's just been so amazing. And I don't really know if I ever thought that would come true. And it's just the most incredible gift, and I can't thank him enough. And another thing that happened more recently is I have a shoe sponsor as well, an amazing shoe sponsor. I'm sponsored by a company called The Dancer and You, and I met her at Michigan as well, and I think she just heard a little bit more about my story. And I don't know if she'd even seen us dance, but she had emailed me and said she was working on a pair of custom shoes for me and said that she wanted to be my shoe sponsor. So I'm like, all the big things are covered. This is so much fun. I don't have to worry about anything.
That's pretty exciting. So you currently dance smooth. Are you dancing rhythm too?
I do not dance rhythm currently.
Okay. Okay.
Mayo and I are going to work on a couple of just fun rhythm dances for some events that we have coming up later in the year.
Okay.
Not to compete in, but just for fun.
Okay. Now, I want to talk a little bit about your Make Lemonade Foundation. You know, I love the name of your foundation. When I was a little girl, my dad used to say to me, when life gives you lemons, make lemonade. And I can't help but wonder if that's where the name of your foundation came from, or if there's some other story behind it. So what you tell me.
I was about 5 years old, and I was watching a segment on TV about Alex, who, she was a little girl, had neuroblastoma.
Mm-hmm.
I walked up to my mom, I guess in tears, and said, Mom, I want to have a lemonade stand for her. And so we did. We had one in my neighborhood, and it was really successful and made me really happy to be able to help and give to someone else. And I love that it was something that my neighborhood kind of came together for, and they were very supportive of it. And so when I decided to create my own nonprofit and make my own stamp on the world, I thought back about what had made a difference for other people in my childhood, going back to my roots. And what I love about the Make Lemonade is it's fun, it's fresh, it's happy, right? Everyone needs a little bit of happiness and sunshine. And it's something that everyone can do. And I find that when you give to others, you're the one that receives the feeling of joy in return. And one thing that I love on a personal side of my foundation is to teach love and acceptance to others, and to really show people that no matter what your challenges are, visible or invisible, you can make lemonade with lemons.
Yeah. When did you start the foundation?
It was incorporated in 2013.
Okay, so it's been around for about 4 years, and your mission is multifaceted, but a big part of what you do is raise awareness of cerebral palsy, of course, but also you raise awareness for the symptom recovery model, which has had such a profound impact on your life. Tell me some of the things you do with respect, or your foundation does with respect to the symptom recovery model.
Well, I think one thing that's very important is to know the reason why I do what I do is because I was inspired at 12 years old, learning that there was no federal funding for cerebral palsy research, and it affects 17 million people worldwide. And then on top of that, it's the number one motor disability found in children. So it's like, how does that all add up? That's not right. That shouldn't be right. That's why nothing has helped me. It's because there's nothing out there. And I think that's one of the reasons why the symptom recovery model is so important to me, is because it is that something to help other people. And so one of our main missions is to raise awareness, because without awareness, you know, not a lot can be done. I would love for one day to just be able to refer to cerebral palsy as CP, and people just know what that is immediately and not have to go into the whole big long story. But then our other really huge mission is to train therapists in the symptom recovery model.
Right.
And spread it out all over, so that you don't just have to come to Atlanta, Georgia to get it, because not everyone is in Atlanta, Georgia.
Right.
And so therefore it's not convenient for everyone. You know, we were very lucky to live in the same state as the therapy program and not have to travel in by plane. And then we want to give grants to children with cerebral palsy to receive X amount of hours of free therapy, so that they can go on their own path and their own journey and experience their own improvements through this therapy program. It should be available to as many people as possible, and the information should be available to as many people as possible. because it is kind of this hidden little secret that's, you know, touched my life in ways that I could never have imagined.
Right. And so, obviously, you can't do all those things without raising money. And you do a lot of different things, but your big thing is the walk, run, roll in Lauren's shoes. That's a 5K race, is that right?
It was a 5K this year and a 1 mile accessible course.
Okay. And was this year the first year of the race?
No, this was the fourth annual, and this year it was very, very exciting. We went on a bit of a new adventure. We switched locations.
Okay.
It takes place in Buffalo, New York, as it has for the past 4 years. But we had it at Wilkinson Point Outer Harbor, which is a very kind of up-and-coming, trendy place. It's along the canal side, so it's very, very beautiful to look at. You know, as you run, you see the water. It's a beautiful view. And what I think was so amazing about this year was not only the new location, but we just had so many wonderful media outlets to go through before the actual race. I had lots of interviews, and we were featured on the front page of the Buffalo News. That was huge. And because of that, I feel like because of our, not only our reputation there that has grown over the past 4 years, but all that extra media coverage that we got this year, we were able to attract so many more CP families that were able to come out and enjoy the day. And one of our main goals of that event is really to honor them and to make them feel special at that event and at all our events, because there's nothing being done for those children. I mean, it's called the Forgotten Disability. So we want to lift them up and make them feel like rock stars, because there's a million different things going on for a million different other disabilities and diseases, but these people really are forgotten, and that breaks my heart. And I never felt that way because my parents just lifted me from the ground up, but because it's so lost, the community of people is not connected with one another.
Right.
So what I love about our event is you have not only the child feeling extraordinary, but the family, because they get to talk to other families and other siblings and other moms and other dads. And I feel like it makes them feel amazing because they automatically have this connection with other people, and they get to uplift one another, and it's just such a beautiful sight to see. It's amazing when someone comes up to you crying because and telling you that someone is talking to their son genuinely, and things that you don't even think about. Like, honestly, I don't think people stare at other people at our event, and they don't try to figure out what's wrong with them. It truly is a day of acceptance and bringing awareness to those, you know, courageous people, because that's, I think, what's very special about our race is we encourage our participants to wear ankle weights to simulate, to an extent, a very minimal extent, what it's like to walk in the shoes of someone with CP.
Oh, wow.
Because when you walk, if you can walk, it's like walking with a 100-pound cinder block on each foot. So it's very, very hard and very, very tiring, and it all happens very quickly. So your energy doesn't always last forever in a day like the typical person's would. And so it's really a unique day in terms of all of those phenomenal things. And on top of that, it's just a fun event. You know, I'm very proud of the event that we put on and all the great feedback that we get. And every year it just keeps improving and improving.
Is there any plan to have a race in another city, or to have races in other cities on different days to expand that?
Not as of right now. Our next big project is our Lemon Twist Gala in Buffalo, New York.
Okay. And that, if I'm not mistaken, is where you and Mayo will be debuting your newest iteration of your routine, the Swan. Is that correct?
Yes, we'll be debuting for Western New York. It'll be very exciting. I'm very, very proud to have Mayo, because he is such an extraordinary person, meet this extraordinary community that has supported me and lifted me in my dream to help others for the past 4 years. So this is something that I think the whole community has been looking forward to, and it's something that I know Mayo and I are looking forward to very much.
Well, how does one get tickets to this Lemon Twist Gala if they're in the New York area, or if they are not in the New York area and they just want to come to your gala because it's going to be fabulous?
They're not online yet, but I will be providing information as soon as they're available.
Online at your website?
At my website.
Foundation. Yes. Okay, can you tell our listeners how they can find the Make Lemonade Foundation website?
The website is www.makelemonade.org, and it's aid with an E.
Okay. Well, you've got a lot of things going on. You're getting ready to go off to college. Your foundation staff is working hard on the Lemon Twist Gala. What else is on the horizon for you?
We actually have a very exciting project in the process right now, and I'm co-authoring my very first children's book. It's called, or will be called, The Swan Princess, and it's based on the show dance that Mayo and I have put together with my story a part of it and weaved in as well.
Who are you co-authoring it with?
Tammy Keene.
Okay.
She's an extraordinary writer. I'm very lucky to be working with her.
That's exciting. And when will that book be available?
You know what's so exciting is it's the first annual Lemon Twist Gala, and it'll be the first outing or showing of my book. So it'll be debuting at the gala with Mayo and I there dancing. We'll be doing autographs. It'll be such a blast. I'm so excited.
Will you be wearing your brand new custom dress?
This dress that I wear for the Swan was made by custom by Dore. I had not received the offer quite yet from Jordy, but Dore had created a beautiful custom white, sparkly as sparkly could be, feathered swan gown that is just breathtaking, and I feel like a princess every time I put it on.
Well, you are a princess. I've seen you dance that routine, and I have to tell you, you do some amazing lifts with Mayo. I mean, you are, he is a tall man.
And he is a tall man. He's my giant, I'm a midget.
I mean, you are up over his head, arms fully extended, turning around. I mean, this is not like a watered down, you know, show dance for a girl with cerebral palsy. I mean, this is a kick your butt show dance. It's amazing. I mean, it's very impressive.
Thank you. And I think when Mayo and I created this, like I said, our whole meeting was so innocent and so magical. I don't know if we ever believed that it would morph into something quite like this. I don't know if either of us knew that I'd have the functionality to do all of the things I do in that routine. And I think what's so fantastic about Mayo is he had just given an interview for one of the competitions that we had participated in called Millennium Dance Sport Championships. And he said something to the effect of, with me, he didn't want to hide any of my weaknesses because there was so much beauty in the determination that I had to overcome them. That's not his exact words, but something to that effect. And I feel like that message is very well received by the audience when we dance that. And I love that because I have a disability, like you said, it isn't a watered down routine. In fact, I think it pushes all of my barriers that I had at the time that we created it. You know, now it's a little bit more effortless because we performed it multiple times. But let me tell you, when we first did that overhead lift, it was like so exciting because it's like, oh my God, I'm floating in the air and my body can do this, my core can do this. And going from being someone in a wheelchair, you know, and not having any strength, having atrophy in almost every muscle of my body, to flying up over his head. It's my belief that the girl in a lot of these lifts, or the woman, pro or not, has the challenging part, because he has to hold her, but she has to hold herself.
Yeah, exactly.
So if she moves, it's all done, right? There's not a lot of saving that beautiful position, you know? So, and then on top of having cerebral palsy and having to coordinate all those muscles, just to do that lift and all of the other lifts and all of the other, you know, very technically challenging steps, I'm very proud of what he put together, and I'm so grateful and appreciative to not only be dancing with someone of his skill set, but his just incredible knowledge of dance and of how it can move others.
Well, you know, Lauren, that the purpose, I described this to you when we first met at the Atlanta Open, when I asked if you'd be willing to come on and be a guest on the podcast. You know that the purpose is to illustrate that anybody can dance. But, you know, more importantly, the purpose and the mission that I have is to encourage people to dance, especially those folks who, you know, who want to give it a try, but for some reason they just feel like they can't. And you know, you've heard people say, oh, I'd love to dance, but I have two left feet, or I have no sense of rhythm, or I'm too shy, or whatever it is. You are such an inspiration for those people and for just everybody. So what advice would you give to these folks who want to give it a try, but they're afraid for some reason? I mean, where do you get your courage?
I think my advice, as hard as it may be sometimes, is to take the fear out of the equation. And when you do that, anything is possible, anything at all. And trust me, I have to be reminded of that myself, so it's not an easy task to do. But if you do that, there's a whole another world that opens up behind those doors. And it's beautiful and magical and can take you places that you never dreamed of. So if you think you can't do something, I would say reevaluate, because you can. I don't like to think that I'm living proof. I'm not really one to compliment myself, but I really do believe that if you have the will, you can do it. I believe it was one of my grandfathers who said it's 80% brains and 20% physical. So hard work, and you can do it. Dreams do come true. And I feel like if you have that mindset, you're unstoppable. And I think that's something so beautiful about dance in general, is it gives you this sense of fulfillment. And I feel free when I dance. I feel free of myself. I feel free of my disability, and it's the most incredible feeling. And when you're dancing with your best friend, who in this case for me it's Ms. Mayo, it doesn't get much better than that. And I feel like if I weren't dancing with him right now, we wouldn't be on this world tour. We wouldn't be receiving all the success that we're receiving, and we wouldn't be, hopefully one step at a time, changing the way people with disabilities are received by others and received by the whole world. So that's one of the goals, and I think what's so beautiful about the partnership is that's really what it's founded on, is just love and respect and acceptance of everyone and anyone. And it's so beautiful that dance can bring that to people, and I hope that one day I can give to someone what he has given to me.
Oh, I have to tell you, you give that to everybody who watches you dance. Everybody who watches you dance. It's such a privilege and a gift to be in the same room with you when you're dancing. And I'm just so delighted that I got to meet you and that you agreed to come on as a guest and share your story. And I just want to thank you and hope that you'll come back again and give us an update on how things are going after the gala.
Oh my gosh, I would love nothing more. And I can't thank you enough for having me on your show and for this incredible opportunity. I mean, I've been looking forward to this for quite some time. It's my first podcast and I'm so glad I was with you.
Thank you so much, Lauren. Okay, folks, until next time, keep dancing.